So, we're learning Mishnah primarily Avos Rav Nosson, which is a compendium work to Pirkei Avos. It's a more elaborate version. Happens to be this Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, and Avos Rav Nosson is almost identical to the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. Today, we'll learn Pirkei Avos just because it's the exact same words. In fact, in many versions of Avos Rav Nosson, they didn't even quote the Mishnah because it's such a well-known Mishnah. They just said, et cetera, so everyone knew it. It was a Mishnah stated by Rabbi Nehorai. Now, it's hard to know who this person was, Rabbi Nehorai. Nehorai, in Aramaic, means light, Nehora. And that was a nickname that Chazal applied to many people who were particularly illuminating. So various occasions, Rabbi Elazar ben Arach, who was one of the famous Talmidim, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, is called Rabbi Nehorai. Rabbi Nechemia, who was the son of Rabbi Akiva, I believe, is called Rabbi Nehorai. Most probably, Rabbi Meir was called Rabbi Nehorai because his name was Meir. And the Gemara in Erevin has a case where he illuminates people's minds, and reminds me a lot of the Ar Samech, whose name is also Meir Simcha, Meshe Chachma, the Ar Samech. So it's definitely a good member of Chazal to be speaking about as Chanukah is fast approaching, and the purpose of light in our lives, and as a metaphor for HaKadosh Baruch, as a metaphor for Torah. So it's interesting that we're reading a statement of Rabbi Nehorai, which probably was a nickname that applied to many different people. As you know, Chazal had nicknames, Rav, Rava, Rabba, these names were applied. And of course, we learned earlier this year the nicknames of Yochanan ben Zakkai gave his Talmidim, Abor Sid She'inam Abetipa, Mayan HaMiskaber, an overflowing river. So they were on such close terms with one another that they easily applied these monikers and nicknames, which is, ironically, one of the themes of what Rabbi Nehorai said. What Rabbi Nehorai talked about was essentially traveling to learn Torah with others. I'm synopsizing it because we'll see the subtleties of language and style, which again, we take for granted. Certainly in the yeshiva world, we travel to yeshiva, we travel from our homes to learn yeshiva. But when you think about it, it's not the common epistemological practice. Most people acquire information, sit in their homes, read a book, read an article, and confer with another person. So in the modern context, it became a little more popular with universities and colleges. But Chazal, at a very early stage, were stressing the importance of communal, interactive, chavrusa, collective learning. And again, we're now getting a peephole into Chazal as they're building the tradition of Torah. We take this for granted 2,000 years downstream, but Chazal are institutionalizing these concepts. Rabbi Meir or Rabbi Nehorai, whoever he was, says, I'm reading it out of Pirkei Avos because it's the same, have a goal in the Makom Torah. You should always travel to study Torah with other people. The Alta Marshi Tevacharecha, don't assume that Torah will follow you. I think it's more poetic. I think Torah will get up and walk, but don't assume that you'll acquire the information. Then he says, and don't think Shechaverecha Yikamu Biyadecha. Don't assume that other people will go study Torah and retrieve and return that information, which is an interesting statement, not just about Talmud Torah, but in general. Some people wait for other people to execute tasks, and some people are more activists. Sometimes it bothers me when people take a pass with projects and responsibilities they should be assuming on their own. So don't assume that other people will carry Torah back to you, A, because it may not happen, B, because why is his blood redder than yours? Why would you want that person to be the carrier of Torah, not yourself? But more importantly, the conclusion of the Mishnah quotes a pasuk in Mishlei, "Ve'al binascha al tishain." Don't rely on your own logic, which typically is assumed to be a question of how much you should rely on your personal intellect as opposed to deliver truths, irrational truths. But in this context, as employed by the Mishnah, "Al binascha al tishain." Don't assume that you can understand Torah individually, to understand Torah by interacting and pollinating other people. And here is, of course, the birth of Chavrusa. Chazal have a statement a lot more compelling, O Chavrusa, O Misusa. And I know, I've seen people in yeshiva throughout my 30 years in the yeshiva world who just simply were never able to hold down successful Chavrusas. And even though many of them learned many, many, many years, there's something off about their learning. There's something missing. The importance of Chavrusa in a collective exchange is not just because there are certain ideas you can't see as we would apply to history or politics or art, differences of opinion, enrichment. Torah, by definition, is infinite. And when it's infinite, it's not just sweeping in its mass, but it's also multidimensional truths. Humans process binary truths. We can only see day or night, or light or dark, or on or off. But in Har Sinai, Hashem told Moshe Rabbeinu, this is Tameh, and there are 49 flowcharts to achieve its Tameh status, and it's also Tar, and there are 49 flowcharts to achieve its Tar status. And in halacha, we're living in the human context, so we have to apply one truth. When we study Gemara, we're not studying one truth. We're studying every possible shard and every possible fragment of Hashem's truth. And Reb Meir actually was very successful at this. Reb Meir was known to be someone that could walk into the Beis Medrash and say things that turn people's head on a swivel. He talked about death being good, v'hinei tov me'od z'maves, or he talked about a lot of very famous midrashim of Reb Meir being able, and the Gemara actually says that he was able to walk into the Beis Medrash and prove this exact thing that I told you, him and his Talmud Simchas that we're studying now. In Bava Kama, Simchas is pshat. So it's not, even if you're the smartest, most infinite human being, you're a human being, and it's hard to process so many truths. Sometimes when you're learning a sukkah, you get prejudice. You see an achron, your heart takes you somewhere. It's hard to be able to flip the sukkah on a swivel. So the importance of studying Torah collectively is beyond just the practical mass size that you can't cover it all. It's simply one mind can't properly process the collective, complementary truths of Torah. Now, of course, the language that Reb Meir employs also intriguing. I just quoted to you the content. But the language is have a golet lemakom Torah. You should exile yourself. It's a very harsh and strident language. You didn't say have a holech, have a nosea lemakom Torah, have a golet lemakom Torah. Now, to a degree, this has been lost in the modern world on two fronts, in the modern world and in the modern world. In the modern world, it's been lost on two fronts because when your grandparents read this Mishnah, they deeply identified because yeshivos didn't come with dorms, didn't come with food. Literally, to learn Torah, it took such spectacular, extraordinary commitment and devotion. Typically, and again, yeshivos didn't always exist. More often in history, we live in the modern movement. We can only envision people studying in yeshivos. Go back 350 years, you learned in the local town with your rav. When you outgrew that rav, you went to the next town to learn with the larger town, with the bigger rav. And then when you outgrew him, you went to the bigger town. You went to Prague, you went to, you know, yeshivos. You found some almana, you found some woman who was willing to host you and to feed you your bean soup twice a day, and you paid her whatever little shards of gold you found, and you really lived a Spartan life. People were really, a Baruch Hashem, in the modern context. We have dorms, we have food, and we have amenities and conveniences. And really, the first yeshiva to offer that was the Chachmei Lublin Yeshiva. When you go to Poland, you'll visit. That was with Meir Shapiro's bit there. His big innovation, when he collected money across the world in the early part of the 20th century, why shouldn't the yeshiva also provide amenities? So this is something that was very, very resonant to people for thousands of years. Learning Torah came at a very steep price. If you leave your home, forget the family, the emotion, and the kiva story, you simply have to live a very, very base lifestyle. Now, the second part of it is galus doesn't just mean the physical toll, but also the cultural and emotional disengagement, to place yourself in the, I talked about this last night in the Musar Chuk, that when Yaakov's described as being in the yeshiva of Shem Ve'Eber for 14 years, Chazal's phrase is he was tamun. We're learning Bava Kama now. Tamun means he was concealed. So that's why the text doesn't discuss it, because for 14 years no one saw him. He was only in the Beis Medrash, so the text doesn't allow us to see Yaakov. It was an invisible 14 years. And certainly, people our age, when we were in yeshiva, there's a cultural disengagement that created a mental and emotional shift and an intensity level. Today, because we live in the world of connectivity and transportation, it's harder to create that sense of you're in Galus for a year, for 2 years. And what do you not have? You have the internet, and you have social media, and your friends. And again, I don't think it pays to bemoan it. I think it pays to be aware of it, and to adjust, and to calibrate your experience, and to try within those realities to create as much disengagement, as much... I'll just give you a simple example. Rav Lichtenstein would be irate, if any boy celebrated Thanksgiving in any way, shape, or form. I mean, he was very, very angry about it, but if he felt you're here for a year, you should... I think in today's context, you're so connected anyway to the politics. It's not as if you're stepping out of your Israeli cocoon just because you miss America. It's just, you're living half here, half there. Your mind's in a thousand different places. But I do think it's important to remember where we came from and how we can try to make adjustments. I'll just conclude. That's a little bit long today, but I'll just conclude with one other thing that struck me. Of course, this was never intended as the original pshat, but... No, texts take on new meaning. Texts are living organisms, and even though when it was written in the first century or the 150 CE, it didn't mean this. I think in 2017 it does mean it. Have a gola l'makom Torah. Jews have spent a lot of time in Galus, and they haven't enjoyed sovereignty. And we're going to celebrate Hanukkah as the renewal of sovereignty, and thank God we're in a state of sovereignty. They haven't enjoyed many of the elements or the aspects of statehood and peoplehood. But Baruch Hashem, because Torah is ahistorical and superhistorical, we've always been able to create Torah, even in our galus. We've always been able to fulfill this gola l'makom Torah. wherever we are, that's been our common language, that's been our survival. And it really starts this week's parsha, where Yaakov knows he's entering Galus and he won't be able to perform Kibbutz Avraham or the mitzvah of Eretz Yisrael. He assures that he spends his 14 years learning, and then a little bit later in Parshas Vayigash, Vayis Yehuda, Shalach Lefanav Goshnech, as I'll assume this to mean, not just as an advanced scout, but someone will build a yeshiva, he trusts Yehuda to build a yeshiva. And throughout history, Jews always had the sense that wherever we travel to in Mas, we have to send an advanced team and build a yeshiva and allow the Gola L'makom Tara. So this week we celebrated the 50th anniversary of coming back to Gush Etzion and building this yeshiva as part of the renewal of Gush Etzion. So we're able to invert that, not Gola L'makom Tara, but Goel, Derech HaTara. We're able to create a Kula through Tara. But it's been an interesting journey based on this prophecy of Gola L'makom Tara. So, welcome to the yeshiva.
Thank you.
Enjoy your day. Enjoy the geula b'makom Torah.
It's a wonderful place to be able to travel to and come learn. So, cool.
Good morning. Good morning, guys. Good morning. Good morning.
We heard we didn't get up to New Rochelle.
Your friends in New Rochelle?
Yeah, my.